Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio, for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, Russ, K5TUX, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 603 of the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This is Linux in the Ham Shack, and this is our Weekender edition, the 136th edition of the Weekender. And before we dive into our hedonistic exploits and our random topic for the evening, we will introduce ourselves. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, we are all here. We do tend to all make it for the Weekenders, although Cheryl was unconvinced earlier, but she's here, so excellent. And it's good because the thing that she's talking about for the recipe corner is the thing that I'm going to be eating when we get done here. So
sweet.
Yes.
Yeah, I ate mine before, so
yeah. I sort of ran out of time because I got done with dinner and I looked at the clock, and you know, I told you I was going to eat before, and I was like, oh no, I guess I'm not. So but anyway, here we are. Let's go over to the picker wheel, which we may or may not hear, as you know, the past has indicated. I'll click the button and see what it chooses for a topic for us tonight.
We hear it.
I see that we hear it. All right, this is the number one topic, the one at the top of the list. And Bill might actually have more to say about this than I will, because I usually deal with, okay, the topic, by the way, is how to deal with QRN. And my way to deal with QRN is to ignore that it exists. So
move.
Luckily, I don't get a lot here. It's usually self-generated if I have any kind of interference, although I have had a couple of weird instances where there has been like static on 40 meters that is like regular, like there's a piece of machinery nearby or something, or whatever. It's just like random static, and it's like random, you know, S7 static, and I can never place it or figure it out. Luckily, that hasn't been a problem of late, so I haven't had to deal with it. Of course, right now I'm not dealing with anything because my antenna is laying on the ground. And hopefully I will fix that at some point. I see that. Do you remember which of the alphas that I bought? Was it the junior or the senior?
Your new antenna?
Yeah, the new one, the NFED.
I think you have the longer one, right? I think it's the senior.
See, it's the
60-some-odd foot one, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, anyway, I'm going to have to buy another, the wire part of that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, because it broke when it came down.
Oh, because your tree, when the tree came down, yeah.
Yep, yeah, you did.
Well, that's a different kind of QRN that you're talking about there. That's just, you know, localized noise. when the tree branch falls on your car and takes out your antenna.
Yeah, that's an entirely different problem, for sure. Right now, things are all noise, no signal. So, because I'm getting it, like, straight from the earth. Because that was but anyway, there obviously are ways to deal with QRN. Like in cars, you can put capacitors on your alternator to take the whine out of your signal and stuff like that. But honestly, I have never ever done anything to deal with QRN. I've just taken whatever shows up on the waterfall or in the visualizer and just accept that that is noise that I will have to deal with. So I know you tend to do things about noise. You have like chokes and things. So I'm going to let you talk a little bit about what you do about QRN.
Right. Like there's different kinds of noise that you can possibly get. I mean, there's localized noise, stuff that's literally in your station or in your house. Those are the kinds of things that I look for first when I'm dealing with stuff. And yeah, I have bags and bags of those little ferrite snap-on beads. And they're on basically every cable in the shack. Although I tend to notice random noise too. Like I was noticing on my microphone today that I could hear my power supply just kind of vibrating on the table, but that's because my microphone is connected to another table. So that's a type of noise too. But on the radio, yeah, generally I try to localize everything to the house, make sure all of that's done. Once you start to get into like atmospheric noise or perhaps just like, you know, different kinds of signals, like on 40, you're going to get like AM stations, you know, broadcast stations and stuff like that, you know, throughout most of the upper half of the usable band in the evenings when it really opens up. That you start using, you know, the fancy features on your rig, like filters. You know, narrow how much you have to take in. Some rigs, like I have the 703, has you know, its own little digital noise filter, or you might even have a noise blanker on your radio as well. Sometimes that will take out some of the noise. But if you're in the city, which I'm in the city, you're going to get a lot of noise. It's just the way it is. There's all kinds of possibilities to have noise that get into your system. And the best thing you can do is try to use an antenna system that would help mitigate that noise. You know, a lot of people use like little loops, mag loops and stuff like that for reception only, because they can null out noise pretty easy. And those are, you know, highly recommended to kind of do that if you have that capability of running like a, you know, a separate receive antenna. That's a great way to take out the noise, is use something that actually is, you know, a little bit more protective of those kind of local noise thing. And what is I just saw something in the chat here. BOGs help. What are BOGs? Those are like normally boots, right? No, I'm just kidding.
In England.
Oh, beverage on the ground. There you go.
Okay.
So yeah, that's another way. If you have room, like if you're in the city, a beverage on the ground, I mean, you can kind of loop it around your perimeter of your house and stuff like that. And sometimes that helps, you know, think of that too, as like a super loop that's on the ground that you use just for reception only. Yeah, you'd be surprised. There's like a lot of different ways that you can combat noise. I don't know. You should probably speak some more and I'll come up with some more things to talk about. But like, I'm just thinking there's like so many things within that, like on different bands, you can have different kinds of noise and how you combat that. It could be different approach, stuff like that.
So what Mike is saying is that if I take my scotch and I put the glass on the floor, that my noise will go away. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely, yeah. Or if you fall over with your scotch in hand, you know, that would be, you would definitely hear stuff a lot better.
Okay. So with that in mind, no, I'm just kidding. So I have been given to believe over the years that we've done the show and talking about antennas and things that vertical antennas tend to, I don't want to say draw because it's not an active thing, but they tend to be noisier. Does this jibe with your?
It depends. They on some bands, yeah, they tend to have a little bit more noise. They pick up a lot more atmospheric noise because they're higher takeoff angles. So that also means that they also receive from higher takeoff angles as well. So they're a little bit more susceptible to some of that noise. But long wires are probably the most noisiest antennas that I can think of, but like a vertical is technically of just a vertical long wire. So,
well, yeah, true enough. And they're also like essentially dipoles, right? Because the ground plane is the other half of the
counterpoise. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you can maybe look at it like that. Like if you have an antenna And there, you know, you've already mentioned that there's different kinds of noise. There's noise that might come from like computers or electronic equipment in your home. There's noise that comes from external sources like motors that might be nearby, atmospheric conditions, and so on. The noise can, of course, come in through the antenna, it can come in through the coax, it can actually come in through the power connection. So looking at those different vectors that noise might enter your station setup, how would you address each one other than just throwing a bunch of ferrite chokes on everything?
Well, I mean, that's what I do. I normally drive a diesel when I do HF on the car, so I don't have to worry about ignition noise in the car. So,
Mike mentioned common mode chokes that you put on your antenna line to definitely get rid of some noise. And that's one thing I've been looking at, because since using the NFED halfwave, Bill has told me that NFEDs can have noise that can come back in on the line, and you definitely should have a choke to mitigate that, which I, of course, have not done. I'm just running barefoot. Well, of course, I don't have an antenna right now anyway, but I guess next time, you know, when I finally get the antenna back up, I should probably choke it, so to speak. So, but I mean, noise hasn't been really an issue for me, although maybe it is an issue and I just don't even realize it.
Yeah, I mean, it could always be that way. I mean, the little snap-on ferrite beads, which is basically common mode chokes for little tiny wires, work really great to isolate computer noise and stuff like that. If you're getting computer noise into your rig through your, you know, rig interface or whatever, sometimes you can hear that stuff and you can mitigate it that way. But yeah, just like an antenna noise, if you're getting the weird stuff, I mean, a common mode choke always kind of helps, you know, kind of gets the RF off of the sleeve of the coax, you know, so it reduces like some of the return interference that you're going to get from your high swers on those antennas that are susceptible to that. But it's always good to have a common mode choke in between your shack and your antenna, just because, well, yeah, it keeps the RF out. RF going towards the antenna side of stuff.
All right. Well, I wish I had more to add, but I really don't, because I mean, I have a bunch of those ferrite beads, and I do have, like, sometimes you'll get cables like your Ethernet cables and stuff like that, and those chokes will be built in. And so I'm doing some RF mitigation by default without having to actually do anything. But for the most part, if it requires any effort on my part, I don't do it. But if you were going to do anything at all to do any kind of noise mitigation, I mean, is that the extent of it? Or do you think there's something super easy you can do to help out or just live with the S7 noise floor?
I mean, there's other things that you can do and buy. You can buy stuff that reduces the noise. Obviously at some point you are reducing your signal because the noise is a component of the signal itself. As Don was saying there too, it depends on the length of your coax, talking about the common mode choke, because your length of your coax between the antenna and, well, the shack could also be, you know, a harmonic or the proper length or wavelength as another antenna. So your coax itself could be an antenna causing, you know, stuff to occur within the receivable range of the radio. And let's see, he has about 100 foot of coax on his NFED, and I really don't see any difference with a choke. Yeah, normally if you have a long amount of coax, especially on those kind of NFED / you know, long wire antennas, that acts as a counterpoise. So it tends to take a lot of that out. I always put a common mode just outside the shack just for protection because, you know, if I decide to do something stupid or if the dog bit the antenna and I don't want RF flowing back into the shack, create a special surprise.
RF going through your dog.
Yeah, well, I don't really care about that. That would be a bonus.
So nice of you.
For as much coax as it's eaten, and it ripped out my entire ground plane for my vertical antenna. So, you know, a little RF wouldn't hurt it, I don't think.
Bill, the animal lover. So.
But yeah, you've probably seen those you know, noise boxes and stuff like that at the HamFet, not, you know, that Hamvention and stuff like that. Well, I think BHI makes some kind of noise solution. Is that right? BHI noise reduction. They also have like DSP systems that you could do for just general noise. Some simple things you can do, especially if you're on the lower bands, changing your AGC settings on your rig. If your AGC doesn't automatically change to a slow AGC for the low bands, you can also use that up in the upper bands if you want, if you're doing like a long conversation with somebody. And what that does is allows that signal to kind of be captured and everything else gets kind of reduced around it. If you use the radio on the low band, you know what I'm talking about, sideband. Generally, that's the normal practice. They sort of, when you tune into a station there, they're sort of loud, but then they all of a sudden slowly get louder and louder. It's because the AGC is kicking in on the rig. And that can have a big impact. When you do contests and CW, you don't want any of that stuff. You want AGC fast mode. So that doesn't really help with those cases. And that's when you want to kick in the filters in your rig to reduce the bandwidth of stuff you're taking into your ears.
And of course, modern rigs and of course, older rigs as well will have features built into them to help you, if not get rid of noise, avert it in a signal. You know, you'll be able to narrow the bandwidth, which you mentioned earlier, of your signal, so you're not listening to all the spurious stuff on either end. They'll also have, like, you know, especially if you've got a loud adjacent signal, you can use a notch filter to get rid of that. Newer rigs have digital signal processing, which can sometimes help with getting rid of noise, making signal cleaner. So yeah, there are definitely things you can do right in the rig itself without having to physically add filters or chokes or anything like that to clean up a signal. And some of those are better than others, but it can definitely make signals more audible and clearer.
Yeah. I was trying to find a video. I'll just link it in the chat here and also put it in the show notes. This is just a crummy little DSP solution that I had. I actually still have it here somewhere. But basically it's just pure DSP and the kind of noise reduction it can do. You can see I have like an S9 noise level on the rig at the time. And, you know, if you can interpret the signal better, sometimes the noise doesn't matter if it can be washed out with fancy electronics. And of course, this is a very old DSP, but, you know, even the old stuff works. So you can always get around various noise with various other tools. It looks like I burned my hand there on the grill or oven or something like that.
Bill's referring to a picture that's posted in the chat for those people who are not privy to the chat, but yeah. Well, of course, wind up in the show notes, so if you want to check it out, please do. All right, so we've covered, you know, quite a few topics. I mean, I would assume that even like relocating an antenna or a piece of hardware in your shack might even help. Just if it happens to be near something that's generating noise or an antenna, you know, I've noticed this, like, you know, especially when you're driving and your mobile antenna is trying to pick up a semi-remote repeater signal, for example, that as you're driving, the signal will come and go. You know, the way the RF propagation kind of works, like, you know, you could pick it up real strong in one spot and 7 feet to the left, you don't pick it up at all, that kind of thing. So relocating, respotting an antenna can definitely help with noise sometimes. And of course, if your neighbors are just running a bunch of electric fences or something, just, you know, try and turn them off.
Yeah, and this is a time of year that you get lots of noise from all these various Christmas lights and everything else that are up. So this is a, you know, a common theme, and you can probably find lots of people complaining about, like, oh, my neighbor put up these new LED Christmas lights and now I got all kinds of noise and everything else. So yeah, watching where you put your antenna always helps. Watching where the cable is going by, like if your cable is wrapped around, you know, or your coax cables near like some kind of electronically read meters, like your power meter or water meter or gas meter and stuff like that. You want to kind of be careful of, you know, bringing your coax very near that stuff. So
Mike is talking about devices with a sense antenna mixing the local noise and bringing it in 180 degrees out of phase, which cancels it out. This, by the way, is equivalent to the same way that you can remove the center channel in music to set up like karaoke tracks where you remove the vocals. It's not super effective. The idea is sound where you take the signal, you invert the signal 180 degrees, and then you mix them back together and the center channel goes away, more or less. And so apparently that works with noise too.
No. Voodoo. Like it.
Well, I think that covers way more than I thought we were going to cover out of this. And you were right, Bill. That's what always happens. It's going to be a 3-minute topic that turns into a 30-minute topic, even though we have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a very vague topic. That's the thing. It's like there's so many different kinds of noise and so many different ways to address it. And is there any right way? The right way? Yeah, I don't know. Try everything.
Try everything or embrace the noise.
Right. Throw the kitchen sink at it.
All right, very good. Well, let's move on from that into hedonism for night, or tonight, not night, tonight, although it is night. And speaking of Christmas lights, yeah, there's all kinds of them on outside right now, but I don't have a radio, so it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how noisy they are. But anyway, let's get into some hedonism, and we'll start off, as we always do, with food. And this one is a very yummy food, and I'm looking forward to my dessert as soon as we get done talking here. So Cheryl will tell you all about it.
Okay, well, so this time I picked bourbon brown sugar cheesecake with a pecan crust and a butterscotch bourbon sauce. And I did this because I have celiac disease, and because of such, our food life has changed drastically. I need a dessert for Thanksgiving. We both like cheesecake, and I went on a hunt for a cheesecake we had in the past. And this recipe won, hands down. We went with a pecan crust to avoid all gluten, and I think it made a perfect crust for the cheesecake. The recipe is long-ish, but it's very easy, so don't let that scare you off. So for the crust, you need butter, pecans, and brown sugar or granulated sugar, your choice. For the cheesecake itself, you need cream cheese, eggs, bourbon, vanilla, dark brown sugar. For the topping, the sour cream topping for that, you need sour cream, brown sugar, vanilla, and bourbon. We're going heavy on the bourbon this time. And for the butterscotch sauce that you drizzle on the top, you need sugar, water, bourbon, and unsalted butter. So, and again, as I said, the recipe is fairly long, but it's quite easy. So all the information will be in the show notes. And then for my mixed drink corner this week, I picked the Maple Bourbon Smash, which is very autumn-ish. It is bourbon, maple syrup, lemon juice, and a lemon twist for your garnish. And again, recipe will be in the show notes.
Gotta like very bourbon-heavy food. And we have tried the Maple Bourbon Smashes. I don't know if it was exactly that, but we have definitely tried bourbon with maple and lemon. And it's pretty amazing. It's kind of like a fall version of a whiskey sour.
Yes, kind of.
And yeah, they're super good. They go really well with the cheesecake, I imagine. I'm about to find out how well the cheesecake goes with some scotch. So,
so what was your feeling on the cheesecake?
The cheesecake is amazing. And one thing that I've noticed with you having to deal with gluten issues, you've spent a lot of time trying to come up with recipes that are gluten-free. And for the most part, all the things you've made that are gluten-free to me are at least as good, if not better, than their gluten-containing cousins. So I'm not averse to this change in diet at all. I mean, most of the stuff is amazing. And this cheesecake is to die for. So definitely give it a try if you're of the... And it's like a no-bake, right? You don't have to do anything.
No, you have to bake it.
Oh, you do have to bake it. This is not
a no-bake. Yeah, you missed that. Yeah, it's not a no-bake cheesecake. But
okay. But yeah, it didn't take you very long to make it, so.
No, cheesecake doesn't usually. So it's a case of whipping it up and throwing it in the oven when waiting.
Right. And if you like nuts at all, the pecan crust on this stuff is stupid good. It's like it makes the graham cracker on a normal cheesecake. You'd be like, I'm never going to have that again. So.
Well, cool. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And I can't wait to have some. So I better get to talking about my whiskey for tonight, which tonight I picked up another whiskey. I have no idea why, because I barely even drink anymore. Almost my entire drinking at this point is just doing these reviews. But anyway, I did pick up one. It's a scotch. It's a single malt called Edradour 10 year. This is a Highland malt, and the reason I wanted to do this one is because I picked this one randomly at a whiskey. It's not a whiskey bar, but a whiskey tasting room. And I just picked it totally at random because I'd never had it. And I'm not really a big fan of Highlands in general, but this one actually kind of blew me away. So I definitely wanted to talk about it. The closest thing I can think it's like is it's similar in character to a Macallan 12. It's a little bit cheaper than Macallan 12, I think. Maybe like $5, but it's sort of right in the ballpark. It's a pot still Holland, and it's really, really good. And according to Edradour, this 10-year-old is handmade and one of the last single malt whiskeys from a traditional farm distillery still in production today. The methods of production remain virtually unchanged in the last 150 years and are only just capable of commercial quantities. Indeed, Edradour Distillery makes as much whiskey in a year as most distilleries produce in a week, a rare pleasure for a fortunate few, aged 100% in Oloroso sherry casks and chill filtered at 43%. It's interesting that they sort of put the chill filtering forward, because a lot of whiskey snobs will tell you that non-chill filtered is the way you want to go, but they don't seem to care, and I actually don't care either, because it's an excellent single malt. The mash bill on this, of course, is 100% malted barley, because it is a single malt. It comes from the Highland region of Scotland. It's at 86 proof, 43%, as already stated. The color is a nice light amber. The nose on it is very sweet. You get a lot of the character from those Oloroso sherry casks that it's been matured in. You get notes of dried fruit, sherry, almonds, and butterscotch. The taste on it is very nice. It's very heavy, has lots of mouthfeel. It's almost chewy when you drink it, which is fantastic. It's exactly the way I like a good bourbon or a good scotch. The notes are spiced fruitcake, simple syrup, honey, almonds, and toffee. If you've ever had like almond roca, you'll know exactly what that tastes like. It's a lot of that without the chocolate. And on the finish, you definitely get some oak barrel influence, honey, and hints of baking spices. And I tell you what, this came in at $70, I think was the bottle. It was like $67, something like that. So we'll call it $70. And I really, really dig this. This is probably at least as good as the Macallan 12, and I would say far less pretentious than Macallan, because they like to tout themselves a lot. And for all those reasons, I'm going to give this a super high rating of 95. It's really good. And that's saying something for me, because Highlands are definitely at the bottom of my region list when it comes to scotch. But I will make an exception to my sort of non-drinking policy, and I will probably drink this bottle until it's gone rather soon. So
break your habit that you've had of not drinking.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm going to drink it today, but it's definitely going to go quicker than the rest. So if this is something you can get a hold of and you like the characteristics that I mentioned and you're into the Scotch world, I highly recommend picking this one up. For a 10-year, it's amazing. The fact that it's chill filtered makes no difference at all. It's a really good Scotch, and I think you should try it. So, all right, Bill, what do you got?
Well, I have something that most people can get at their Costco's. It's the 2025 Kirkland Signature Bourbon Barrel Aged Imperial Stout Vintage Ale. So many words to name their beer. And this is a limited release. It's crafted by Deschutes Brewery for Costco. It's aged for about 9 months in bourbon barrels. And they have all kinds of fancy tasting notes and everything else. It is, you know, it tastes like a bourbon barrel aged beer. I'm just taking another swig of it here. Yeah. You know, it's some of these bourbon aged imperial stouts can be a little on the super sweet and super syrupy side. At least that's kind of the indication that I get when I normally have them. And this one is actually quite tame. And I might be a reason why some people don't like this one. I see some notes in here that says some reviewers suggest that the barrel character could be more pronounced. So I don't know what that means, but it definitely tastes barrel aged to me. It tastes like a pretty decent imperial stout that's in there. It was only like I think $7.99 or something crazy like that. I bought it at the Costco in Naples, Florida, while I was down there. And I have not seen it at our Costco here in Montana, but that could be due to our weird liquor, alcohol license, you know, rights, and I don't know, all the garbage that comes with Montana and our archaic liquor laws here. But if you can get your hands on it, it's actually, it's pretty good. I'm trying to see what size this bottle is. It's fairly large, 32 ounce, maybe something like that. It's a big beer bottle. It's way bigger than a pint for $7.99. So yeah, it's at least probably two glasses full. So yeah, check it out. Kirkland Vintage Ale, probably limited quantities at your Costco if you normally get these kind of releases.
Oh, very good. Well, if I ever decide that I want to try a beer again, we have a Costco. I might go see if they have it.
Yeah, it's a stout and it's barrel. It's bourbon. Yeah, bourbon barrel.
Yeah. But I might actually probably just hang a left into the bourbon aisle and just pick one of those instead. So
yeah, get a nice cheap handle or something, right?
Kirkland Signature Bourbon or whatever they've got. I'm sure they've got at least
they those. Got everything now.
Yeah, like, right.
I couldn't believe it. I walked into the liquor store there too because they had that whole liquor thing too. And I was like, wow, they make all of their own stuff. Well, I mean, they probably don't make it. They get it labeled for Kirkland, you know, Kirkland tequila, Kirkland gin, Kirkland rum and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that brings us down to the end of our hedonism for tonight and down to the end of the show, with exception of the announcements, which is basically just if you can help support the show financially, we really appreciate it. You can do that via Patreon, PayPal, buying merch. You can also sign up over on YouTube to check out our YouTube content and submit some topics for our random picker wheel. That would be great. And as far as YouTube is concerned, I am planning on doing a video to go along with the episode I did on automated certs. So I actually walk through the process and show you what I did, because I have a feeling that just explaining it probably wasn't super beneficial for most people. So I'm going to have a companion video that actually shows you what I did. So hopefully that will be a little more helpful.
Very cool.
And we're also running down to the end of our year. We have two more shows left in 2025, and we'll do a deep dive, and then we'll do a topics slash year end wrap up on the 14th, and then we'll be off for a month. So definitely be with us here. And of course, on that show on the 14th, we will be inviting listeners to participate if they so choose. If you have a Discord account and want to listen over there and have a microphone, we'd love to have you chat with us for our last show of the year, 605. And then we'll come back in the middle of January and start doing some more stuff. But with that, we have a really, really short list of new subscribers and so on. And we'll let Cheryl rattle that off super quick, and then we'll let you get out of here.
Yeah, so this time, apparently everybody was busy with Thanksgiving. So we had no subscribers and Patreons, no free Patreons, no Twitter, no Instagram, no Mastodon, no Blue Sky, no mailing list. Charlotte did join us on Discord. And of course, tonight in the live chat, we have Steve, KA7HVT, Mike, K6GTE, and Don, KC9ZMY. And that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Super fast. Well, anyway, we hope if you celebrated Thanksgiving, you had a great Thanksgiving. We hope you have a good holiday season coming up. We do have two more episodes, so join us for those before we wrap up 2025. And in the meantime, have a great week. We'll catch you in a week with our next episode, our deep dive. And until then, we'll just let you go now, and we'll talk to you all very soon for episode number 603 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD 73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1-909-547-7469. That's 1-909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.